This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Thursday, 17th of March, 2022, and therefore St. Paddy's Day. So happy St. Patrick's Day for all the Irish listeners out there. Markets seem to be in a celebratory mood, to say the least. We talked about markets being in la-la land yesterday, and the short squeeze, if that's what it is, continued with this sentiment shift in Asia, continuing to follow through higher. The market able to absorb what was a fairly hawkish FOMC, and we'll get into the details of that. But I suppose with this move, technically looking at the S&P 500 at least, as you can see on slide two, I put up a chart of the latest future there. Looks like around that 4,400 level, which was the 61.8% retracement of the big move down in February, would be the next focus point. And then the 200-day moving average, which is parked well above 4,500 at this point, would be the next resistance area. There's nothing that we've seen in the market that has us changing our longer-term outlook here, that we're still very cautious for a number of reasons that we covered in yesterday's podcast. But Peter, are you seeing it looks like a pretty broad advance here across a lot of our equity theme baskets. But are you seeing anything in the internals that that's interesting here?
Well, what stands out is, of course, our Chinese consumer technology basket. I mean, 16% move in a single day. That's pretty massive. And then, of course, the e-commerce and gaming. But as you can see on both the month-to-date and year-to-date columns, it's just a flip side. It's a rebound that was driven by all the biggest losing themes, and the best performing themes so far this year were the worst performers yesterday on a relative basis. So we're looking at that reversal, and if you look at the Hang Seng futures, they're up 6.5%. So sentiment in China is really extending on that important vow from Li He, 2 days ago in his speech to the State Council, that China will do a lot more to support the economy and its equity market. So that's really where we are here in Europe. Slightly higher, and the US equity futures slightly higher. But I think the main takeaway is still that, you know, we're only down 1.4% in European equities from the day on the close before the invasion in Ukraine or of Ukraine. And I think it speaks volume of a market that is betting heavily that a peace deal is coming very soon. And that was also some of the indications we got yesterday that also lifted sentiment ahead of that FOMC. Great decision.
Yeah, and we did see a little bit of a different tone at times from Russia. It's very confusing, though, the different headlines you get from various officials. But even the Ukrainian side saying that the Russian position had become or was taking a more, quote, realistic approach to things. There's some 15-point plan that's supposedly in circulation, some idea of a neutral Ukraine, but the one that would be allowed to have armed forces and some... Yeah, some plan that may be in under discussion, but the reality on the ground doesn't seem to have changed much. And there's been some pretty belligerent rhetoric I saw from Russia, at least one person this morning. And then yesterday you had Zelensky speaking live before the U.S. Congress and appealing for more U.S. aid, and the U.S. President Biden authorizing some $800 million in some pretty sophisticated weaponry, including anti-aircraft missiles, anti-armor stuff, small arms, ammunition, etc., and even drones, as far as I understand, with some strike capability. So things are, you know, we're far from clarity, but you're right. There does seem to be some of that baked into the cake here as well, in terms of this rebound or mean reversion or short squeeze, what have you. But let's look at the FOMC last night. It was a rather important event risk. It was finally the rate meeting, or the meeting at which rates finally lifted off 25 basis points, as was expected by the vast majority, with one dissent. That was St. Louis President Bullard, who voted for 50 basis points. And the forecasts suggesting that we will see 6 more rate hikes this year, one of which, basically one at every meeting, one of which is very likely to be of 50 basis points, whether that's the one in May or the one in June. And this brought the overall terminal sort of, or the end of 2022 projection by the market a little bit higher, just a few basis points higher relative to where it was going into the meeting. Of course, the actual dot plot moved significantly because it was very out of date since December. And I've put the two side by side, the December dot plot and the March dot plot from the Fed, on slide three. So you can see that big shift. And I think what's maybe a bit more interesting is the sort of impression you get that back in December, they were still thinking there would be a really slow, steady rate hike cycle, somewhat akin to the Greenspan move in the early 2000s, or akin to the Greenspan / Bernanke move in the early 2000s. And we would see a rate hike regime spaced over 2022 all the way into 2024. Instead, you get the impression it's going to be a very steep this year, slacking off a bit next year and peaking already next year. And that's what the market is saying as well. And if you look out on the far right there, I put up the June 2023 Eurodollar short-term interest rate. That's around where the peak in the cycle is being priced, or at least in the futures market, or the risk of the peak is being priced. And that's where we're seeing the biggest move. So a tighter Fed priced, also quite hawkish was the indication that QT, it will be coming at a quote coming meeting, whatever that means. That was in the statement, and Powell saying in the presser specifically that this could be as soon as May. And he also said that the pace of balance sheet reduction would be steeper than was the case when they kicked that off back in late 2017 in the prior cycle. So all in all, quite a hawkish meeting. But I think with the risk sentiment able to look through this and rally yesterday, the dollar was taken lower because the marginal surprise didn't dent risk sentiment. So there we are. And yes, dollar yen was higher because of the implications for yields. U.S. yields higher all along the curve. Further flattening in the curve, by the way, suggesting that we're bringing forward the risk of a recession with all of this. And then the indication on the inflation, a bit more realistic, certainly for 2022, predicting the PCE core will now be 4.1 versus 2.7. And then raising that 2024 forecast, I think that was crucial, to 2.3 for the PCE core from 2.1. So still saying that they're not going to quite be in the 2% range by then. And then again, in FX markets, the dollar yen was higher. Euro Swiss is higher on the implications for rates here. And we see the Aussie trying to come back as well. There's a Chinese angle on that. And there was a very strong jobs report out of Australia overnight. But we still need to dig ourselves a bit out of trouble. To get out of trouble, we need to pull a little bit higher here, as you can see on slide four with that Aussie dollar chart. Arguably, we need to get back above, let's call it 73.50 plus, to wipe away this move that was triggered initially by the outbreak of war in Ukraine. And then when the commodities failed to sort of sustain a new rally, the Aussie crept back lower. And I think we do need to see that commodity side picking up again to see Aussie dollar significantly higher, because the Reserve Bank of Australia is certainly doing very little to support the currency, really dragging its heels despite signs of a rebounding economy. And as you see on the FX board, the yen very weak, weakest of the lot really on these rising yields. Key that we have a Bank of Japan meeting up tonight. I'll talk about more about that in a moment. But Ole, we saw a rebound as well yesterday in, despite the hawkish Fed, we saw a decent rebound in gold. I suppose most of that was dollar related, but it came back so far. It did find support at that key level, but what are we looking for now? I mean, it's got a lot of ground to retrace to look healthy again, technically.
Yeah, it has indeed. Gold has once again done what it does best. You need to hate it before you can fall in love with it again. And it was really quite a significant sell-off we had since hitting that near record high last week. But what's happened in the meantime is short-term momentum longs, probably bailed out. So we saw quite a significant build-up in futures length from speculators in the run-up to that peak last week. They have been part of the selling pressure on the way down. But during the past week, while the market has come down, we've actually seen almost an acceleration in demand for ETFs. You can see that here on slide six, the yellow line, the red line, we continue to move higher despite the correction in gold. And that does indicate the longer term investors, they're still looking for some protection against perhaps the risk that the Fed will not manage to bring inflation under control before the economy slow to a point where they may struggle to add further hikes. So it's still acting as an insurance policy against something potentially going wrong. So as you mentioned, John, key support below 1900 holding, and for now, if we need to really to move back above 1962 as the Fibonacci level, just to indicate that the worst is over for now. But it looks like it is, we'll have to keep an eye on yield developments and the dollar as well.
Yeah, and then in terms of inflation risks, we've talked a lot about crude oil recently. It has erased most of that move since the outbreak of war in Ukraine. Not a big change there. It was even down quite a bit yesterday at one point, I think around $100 this morning on Brent. But a bit more action in the food markets. What's going on here? Because we still have, I assume, plenty of uncertainty around the crop, certainly in Ukraine for this year, the wheat crop.
Indeed, and just finishing off the oil story, we have bounced back above $100, and I think that makes perfect sense. The war premium has completely been priced out as of yesterday. The peace talks obviously ongoing, but the Russian oil is still not hitting the market, so we will run into quite a sharp reduction in supplies next month from Russia, and that's not going to be offset by the temporary slowdown in demand from China due to the COVID lockdown. So the oil market still remains tight, and the price below 100 looks relatively too cheap at this point. But the good news on the food commodity side is the fact that we have seen a sell-off in wheat prices. We're still well above the longer-term trend, but we've dropped 25% in Chicago, 15% in Paris. Several things. First of all, the focus on Ukraine with the peace talks ongoing. Most of the wheat planted in Ukraine is winter wheat, so that doesn't need any additional work this spring. They need to wait for the harvest time, which is not before July. So that obviously gives us some time for peace to arrive and for farmers to get back into the fields. And then in addition, we got the phenomenon with the agricultural commodities compared with the oil and metals that we have very short cycles. So if we do have high prices, then farmers will try to respond very quickly. And we are seeing signs of that with the increased acreage being allocated to wheat production this year, both in Europe, especially in the US, but to a certain extent also in Canada. So weather permitting, these countries or these regions should provide some a decent pickup in wheat production this year.
All right. And then, Peter, you mentioned, and I agree, I think there's still plenty of uncertainty, even if we were to see a peace deal signed tomorrow, how quickly these sanctions against Russia would become, you know, would be erased or removed over time, depending on the situation. So I would still suggest maybe less so on food prices, but more so on the energy side. There's some lingering uncertainties, regardless almost of what happens from here. And then on the housing front, you pulled out Lennar, an interesting story there, of course, with mortgage rates really soaring in the U.S. I think they're up to around 4.5%, if I'm not mistaken, from around 3% lows. And the new housing market has been on fire, doing better, as I mentioned yesterday, than during the housing bubble years just before the financial crisis. But that activity doesn't seem to be slowing down for Lennar, at least, I guess, from judging from what you're saying here on slide 7.
Oh, I'm actually teasing a little bit here, saying maybe Powell has a point on the U.S. economy when he says that it can easily absorb a pretty aggressive change in interest rates. We have seen 150 basis point move in the mortgage rate in the U.S. in a span of 9 months, and yes, we are at 4.5%. So that is, you know, the high. It's back to the highs we had in 2013 and the highs we had in late 2018 before the big policy mistake by the Fed, and when the economy was actually slowing down. But at that point in time, the mortgage rates were not reflecting that slowdown. And as you can see, I mean, Lennar is actually lifting its new orders, or it's putting out new orders range that is above the estimates by the street, and it's also increasing its fiscal year deliveries with 1,000 units from 67,000 to 68,000. So that's obviously quite positive. A small negative was that the other day the NAHB housing activity reading index were actually below estimates missed estimates and was actually trending lower. So let's see, a lot of things could still change, but I do find it pretty positive for the U.S. economy that Lennar can maintain the current speed given what's taking place in mortgage rates.
All right, I'll let you run through the stocks to watch today and the earnings in the next couple of slides there.
Yeah, I don't want to dwell too much on it. I think the big one of the two big stories, I think, is ThyssenKrupp, which is a very big industrial group, including being a steel maker. They have suspended their forecast for this year's free cash flow. And that's, you know, we're almost 3 months into the year. So you have a quarter point of data, and now you're suspending your free cash flow expectations for the year. That's obviously very negative. They say it's very unclear at this point whether their steel business can actually being a going concern on a standalone basis. So a lot to chew on there if you have exposures to that part of the market. And they're also going to use more capital because of rising raw materials. So basically having, you know, your net working capital is getting more expensive and drawing more capital. And then I want to highlight European car makers, because we had the worst February sales figures on record. I think the record goes back to around 2000. So it's over a 20-year period. We haven't had this low February sales activity in the European car market. And then it's there's a lot of troubles, you know, production lead times or order lead times is 12 months now for Volkswagen. The important wiring that are used in cars, a lot of that is coming from Ukraine, obviously being halted at this point in time, disrupting production, and we still have constraints on the semiconductor sides, hence why Intel announced yesterday that they will begin already this year digging in the ground close to Magdeburg, because they are setting up a semiconductors factory. But in general, they expected to spend 80 billion euros on R&D and manufacturing capacities in Europe over the next 8 to 9 years. So a lot of things are happening, but right now it's not fun to be a car maker, that's for sure.
Yeah, and interesting, you're pulling out FedEx on slide 9 there. One of the stocks that I'm sure did well during the pandemic because of all the sitting at home and ordering stuff with your stimulus cash in the U.S., but I guess now maybe some of that growth coming off on the physical delivery side, and then they're beset by costs, I imagine. And maybe, I guess, labor shortages. I remember you saying something about they didn't have the unionized workforce, for example, of UPS. So they were suffering from the labor constraints more than UPS. But what's your spin there?
Yeah, so the expectations are for a 10% top line growth in the previous fiscal quarter for FedEx. They're not following the calendar year. But earnings per share is expected to be flat. So that pretty much tells you the story, right? So there's a margin pressure going on, and they really hit on the wage input costs, but also they're doing massive investments to expand supply. We talked about it yesterday. It's one of the, you know, the four factors that impact equities, and we are in a supply constrained economy, and it means that the only way to alleviate that is either, you know, cross demand. You know, maybe the central banks are doing that with high interest rates. We'll see. But then, you know, the other possible action you can take is just invest a lot to expand supply, and that is what we're seeing in the logistics industry and FedEx in particular. And it's not fun, I think, to grow double digit on the top line but not be able to transfer any of that to the bottom line. So, and I'm very curious to see and read what they say about their operations in Russia and how the whole situation is disrupting the overall logistics industry.
All right, and let's go to the macro calendar, because we're not finished with the central bank action for this week by any means. We have the Turkish rate announcement up around noon, Central European time. No change expected there, despite 54% year-on-year inflation. The policy rate expected to be maintained at 14%. Somehow the Turkish lira has not been weakening that much recently, in part, I think, on the risk sentiment rebound, and that really helps on the commodity side because of Turkey's import of energy in particular. It helps that those oil prices have mean reverted quite a bit after the big spike higher. Bank of England, they're expected to move 25 basis points again today. Watching for guidance, the assumption is another series of rate hikes is in store for this year, but they'll be going slower than the Fed by the end of the year. The Fed should be picking up beyond there. And I think the UK economy is an interesting one, as we're not seeing the fiscal stimulus there. It's actually going the opposite way on the fiscal side of what we're seeing in Europe. So I think that's an economy to watch for recessionary risks as the year wears on and we head into the early part of next year. And then overnight, tonight, we have the Bank of Japan. And it's very interesting to see this very weak yen, because, again, with a yield curve control policy, keeping the 10-year JGB cap of 0.25%, if they continue to do that and yields rise elsewhere, the currency has to absorb the pain. So we're assuming they're maintaining that policy. There is a CPI data point tonight, and one reason to expect that they will maintain that is if you look at the unbelievable CPI figures out of Japan, Yes, we're expecting a plus 0.9% year-on-year headline inflation level, but the core expected at minus 1%, ex fresh food and energy. Minus 1% in this world of inflation does not suggest the Bank of Japan is set for a significant tightening here. And that's, in fact, a new low for the cycle. So that bears watching. The only reason for them at one point to head tighter would be that if those headline figures continue to go higher, simply because energy prices and energy imports are becoming really significantly expensive in Japanese yen terms. So that would be an interesting one to watch as well. Lots of ECB speakers out today as well, a couple of US data points. And yeah, just the ongoing reaction to this FOMC meeting, which turned out slightly hawkish, more hawkish than expected, sorry. And I think the market perhaps underappreciates the implications of a more aggressive QT, quantitative tightening schedule, that could be coming into view already with the May FOMC meeting. All right, let's stay careful out there, see what happens next, and we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.